Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique sur les résultats financiers du premier trimestre de l'année 2015 de WSP. Welcome to the WSP First Quarter 2015 conference call. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Isabella Jahi, Vice President, Investor Relations. À vous la parole. Please go ahead, Ms. Jahi.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. First, I want to thank you for taking the time to take part in this call today. We will be discussing our Q1 2015 performance and provide you an update on our operations since our last conference call in March. Our remarks will then be followed by a Q&A session. Joining me today are Pierre Choiret, our President and CEO, and Alexandre Lheureux, our CFO. Please note that this call will be recorded and posted on our website tomorrow. Before I turn things over to Pierre, I just want to point out that some statements that we will make during the call might be forward-looking and that actual results may be different from those expressed or implied. And we at WSP disclaim any intent to update or revise any of these forward-looking statements except as required by law. I would now like to turn the phone over to Pierre Choiret. Pierre?
Thank you, Isabelle. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this conference call. We are quite pleased with our first quarter performance, which is the first full reporting period of WSP and Parsons Brinckerhoff's combined operations. There are indeed many reasons to be satisfied with this quarter. First, as you will see from Alex's comments later, we delivered a solid performance not only on the revenue front, but also in terms of our backlog, which reached $4.7 billion, representing 9.6 months of revenues. We also delivered strong organic growth across all operating regions and saw an EBITDA margin increase of almost 1% in the legacy WSP business in Q1 2015 as compared to Q1 2014. Parsons Brinckerhoff's operations, which are all reported under acquisition growth, had a softer quarter, mainly due to integration activities and expected seasonality, particularly in the U.S., which is Parsons' largest operating segment. Secondly, after almost 6 months of the combined entity's operations, we have made progress with our integration, which is being executed as planned. We are already operating under a unified budgetary process and financial reporting structure, which took much more time to achieve when WSP and Genivar were brought together in 2012. With the objective of fostering margin improvement, we are now focusing on benchmarking our various operations worldwide, and efforts are also being made to capitalize on the revenue synergy opportunities by connecting our experts and teams on a regional and on a global basis. With that in mind, Alex, Paul Dolan, our COO, and myself had the opportunity to visit several of our new Parsons Brinckerhoff colleagues in offices in Asia Pacific, Europe, and the U.S. I have to say that we were very impressed by the depth and breadth of our teams and the scale and complexity of the projects they undertake. At this time, we are fine-tuning our 2015-2018 combined strategic plan, which will be presented at our annual general meeting on May 21st. Turning now to operations, the overall performance of most countries was on target. Our Canadian operations were solid despite the anticipated downturn in Alberta as a result of the decline in oil and gas prices. Organic growth was positive at 3.4%. We saw encouraging activity in Quebec, and we seem to have positive momentum in Ontario as a result of recent announcement by federal and provincial governments pointing to increased infrastructure investment, particularly in transit, which bode quite well for the future. However, these positive trends will not be sufficient to mitigate the slowdown of our activities related to oil and gas in Alberta. We thus expect negative organic growth and lower margins in Canada in the second quarter as well as for the remainder of the year. We remind you that the Focus acquisition was completed at the beginning of Q2 2014 and will therefore be reported under the organic line instead of the acquisition one, effective Q2 2015. In anticipation of this, During the last part of Q4 2014 and during Q1 2015, we proactively right-sized our workforce by approximately 500 employees, 90% of whom being from the oil and gas sector, mainly contractuals working in facility engineering and geomatics. On the project front, we are up and running with the Turcotte Interchange mega project, and we were recently chosen by Quebec's Ministry of Energy and Natural Resources for our largest ever mine closure mandate, a six-year environmental project valued at close to $17 million in revenues for us. We also will be designing one of Ontario's first LRT systems as the City of Waterloo commissioned Parsons Brinckerhoff and WSP to serve as project manager for this $11.5 million fee project. In the U.S., we posted a 10.2% organic growth, with the building and environment sectors delivering strong results. The integration of CCRD, which has a strong expertise in the healthcare sector, is progressing well, and we are actively driving revenue synergies, both pushing their healthcare expertise throughout our network and commercial real estate expertise into their legacy CCRD offices. As anticipated, Parsons Brinckerhoff delivered a softer contribution due to the seasonality of their business cycle, and the transportation and power sectors were stable. We secured several projects during this quarter, such as the $27.5 million in fees San Francisco Airport Terminal 1 redevelopment, and an $8.8 million project for the Florida Department of Transportation in the context of the reconstruction of the I-4 Expressway in Orange and Seminole counties. Finally, in environment, we secured an important climate change project with the Sacramento Municipal Utility District. We continue to have a positive outlook for the U.S., and I invite you to attend our Analyst and Investor Day, which will be held in New York on June 10th and will specifically focus on our U.S. operations. All information pertaining to this event is available on our website. Moving across the Atlantic, we have our Europe, Middle East, India, UK, and Africa operations. And in the UK, we posted a strong 13.2% organic growth with solid EBITDA margins. And we recently received the highly coveted Engineering Consultancy of the Year Award. And I here want to take a minute to congratulate our team for such an achievement, as this recognition not only highlights our very strong position in the marketplace, but rewards our technical expertise and excellence. Organic growth in the UK was mainly generated by our buildings, land development, and transportation segments, and the UK market continues to be buoyant, and our UK building team, in collaboration with our experts from the US and the Middle East, was recently commissioned to provide engineering consulting services for the next stages of the Royal Atlantis Resort Residences in Dubai. And we are particularly proud of this world-class project, which clearly demonstrates how clients can benefit not only from our global expertise, but also from our multidisciplinary approach in which a number of engineering specialties are required. While the power sector continues to remain soft, infrastructure development is strong, and the outcome of the recent general election and the visibility that it provides supports our positive outlook for this country. In the Nordics, performance continued to be good, particularly with 11% organic growth in Sweden, where government is undertaking major infrastructure investments. In that context, we secured two major rail projects in the Greater Stockholm region. Finland continued to perform well despite a slow economy, and we were recently appointed to develop the initial plan for a light rail project linking Helsinki and Espoo, Finland's two largest cities. In Central Europe, France and Germany delivered on plan, and the markets are stable. The Middle East continued to provide good growth opportunities and posted 53.4% organic growth despite a challenging and volatile gas and oil price environment. We continued to win several projects in the building segment and continued growing our infrastructure platform. Indeed, we were appointed by the Ministry of Public Works to design and supervise a major highway upgrade in the Kuwait metropolitan area. Finally, in South Africa, the markets remain challenging, but we were able to post a 10.7% organic growth, mainly supported by the property and industrial sectors. On the power front, we continue to work on the Medupi Power Project, one of the largest coal power stations in the Southern Hemisphere. Our final region is Asia Pacific, and in Asia, the combination of the two teams, Parsons Brinckerhoff and WSP, created a leading property and buildings group in this region, and the performance is currently supported by a very good market. We posted solid 19.6% organic growth, and we were awarded the Shanghai International Port Development Project with a New World Residential Development Project in Hong Kong, which was one of the first joint bids by WSP and Parsons Brinckerhoff. We anticipate a solid performance for the remainder of the year in China, Singapore, Taiwan, and Korea. Finally, in Australia, we posted 10.9% organic growth and secured various projects in the building sector, including the North Wales Rail Link and the Christchurch Convention Centre. With regards to legacy Parsons Brinckerhoff, our performance was soft as a result of a major P3 project cancellation. Even though the Australian market is still challenged by low commodity prices, our overall sentiment for the remainder of the year is generally positive, with major investments in infrastructure being planned. In collaboration with Lang O'Rourke, we were recently chosen as the preferred delivery partner for an Aussie 4.3 billion 155 kilometer section of the Pacific Highway upgrade. This project win, which could generate up to 160 million in fees over the next 5 years, is a major achievement for our Australian team. In the first quarter, we have been focusing on increasing global connectivity and have strengthened our collaboration to win projects in strategic areas. I gave you earlier the example of the Waterloo LRT project in Canada, and I could also talk in Australia, where MMG Limited recently accepted a bid for services from Parsons Brinckerhoff for its global mining operations. This win is a direct result of early collaboration between Parsons Brinckerhoff's mining division in Australia and WSP in Canada, and this is an example of the synergies that exist in our expanded firm. On the longer term, we believe that these examples of collaborative initiatives will provide the true leverage for this transaction. Now I'd like to turn to acquisitions. During the quarter, we completed the acquisition of environmental firm SPL in Canada and acquired a mechanical engineering firm of 50 employees in Sweden. The Nordics is a region of focus for us, and we are looking at various opportunities there. In addition, we are holding discussions with potential complementary strategic targets in the US, the UK, and in Canada. Overall, we continue to see a robust pipeline of opportunities, and we will discuss in more depth our target geographies and sectors as part of our strategic plan presentation. In conclusion, we are pleased with the progress of the combination of WSP and Parsons Brinckerhoff that we have achieved thus far. Having gone through a similar integration process 2 years ago, I can assure you that we are building on the experience acquired, and we are working as a team to drive the best of both firms. Looking at the solid organic growth and margin expansion delivered by legacy WSP, the strength of our backlog, and all the integration milestones that we have achieved, we know that we have a solid business and we have confidence in our outlook for 2015. Before I turn things over to Alex, who will comment on our financial performance, just a quick update on the multi-consult IPO process. As we have announced, we have decided to divest our 24.7% interest in this company, and significant milestones were recently met, and we anticipate an Oslo Stock Exchange listing of the company for May 22nd. Market demand has been positive, and the total proceeds of this divestiture, inclusive of dividends, are expected to be at the higher end of our announced 85 to 95 million range at today's exchange rate. These proceeds will be used to pursue our acquisition strategy, and organic growth initiatives. I will now ask Alex to provide his comments on our financial results.
Thank you, Pierre, and good afternoon, everyone. As Pierre mentioned, we are pleased with our performance as we delivered strong organic growth. Revenues and net revenues were $1,403.7 million and $1,024.8 million, up 174.6% and 132.6% respectively, mainly as a result of business acquisitions. Global organic growth amounted to 14.2%. These figures consisted of 11.8% organic growth on a constant currency basis and a 2.4% increase due to a favorable foreign exchange impact. EBITDA was $85.3 million, up 43.2 million or 102.6%, and in line with our previously disclosed outlook, while EBITDA margin represented 8.3% of net revenues. Although Legacy WSP delivered solid margin, the overall decrease was mainly due to the combination of Parsons Brinckerhoff operation, which have a higher structural cost base. However, this figure is consistent with our guidance for lower EBITDA early in the year, ramping up through the rest of 2015. Our net earnings attributable to shareholders, excluding non-underlying items, net of income taxes, stood at $31.8 million or 36 cents per share, up 83.8% and 9.1% respectively. The $4.7 million in non-underlying items consisted of $2.8 million related to integration and $1.9 million related to right-sizing in Western Canada. We are all well positioned to achieve our forecasted annual cost synergies of approximately US$25 million, which we expect to achieve over a 24-month period. A more granular update on cost synergy will be provided during our Q2 results conference call in August. Financial expenses, which relate mainly to interest expenses incurred on credit facilities, amounted to $10.7 million compared to $3.6 million last year and $5.1 million in Q4. This increase was mainly due to the use of credit facilities to finance integration activities, business acquisitions, and manage our cyclical working capital requirements. It had an impact of approximately 5 cents on EPS as compared to Q4 2014. Incorporating full 12-month EBITDA for all acquisition, our net debt to EBITDA ratio was 2.15 times, slightly higher than at year-end. This increase was mainly due to the drawing down of credit facility for working capital purposes in correlation with seasonality, more specifically related to the Parsons Brinckerhoff business. This ratio is expected to return to target range of 1.5 times to 2 times by the end of the year. Looking at the company's balance sheet, DSO stood at 85 days, which is stable compared with last year. Finally, our backlog is extremely solid and should positively contribute to the company's performance in the longer term. It increased by $739.3 million to a record $4,674.4 million, including $2,633.1 million for Parsons Brinckerhoff. With an 18.8% increase, this backlog represents approximately 9.6 months of revenues. New projects included in the backlog span the globe and in all various sectors. Given the 50.9% participation in the DRIP, our cash payout ratio on EPS for the quarter, excluding non-underlying items, stood at 51%. The company does declare a quarterly dividend of 37.5 cents per share, payable on or about July 15 to shareholders on record on June 30, 2015. Our first quarter results were consistent with our expectation. As a result, we are reconfirming our 2015 outlook. Pierre?
Thank you, Alex. So this concludes our remarks for today. As mentioned earlier, we will be presenting our 2015-2018 strategic plan at our upcoming annual meeting next week. And now we are open for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the pound key. Thank you. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from the line of Mona Nazir from Laurentian Bank. Your line is open.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Hi. So I just wanted to turn to the Parsons acquisition first. You spoke of seasonality at Parsons. I'm just wondering, does that mirror that of the legacy WSP with Q1 being the lowest period?
Yeah, they're both the lowest. They both experience their lowest contribution in Q1, but at various degree.
Okay. And just with the integration, I'm wondering, has there been any surprises thus far, or everything's been as expected?
Listen, there's always I wouldn't say surprises, but there's always discoveries, and you learn from each other. But if you ask me if there's anything material that in terms of surprise, the answer is no.
Good or bad, by the way.
Okay. And of the $25 million in synergies that you do expect, did anything fall into Q1, or it's not overly meaningful as of yet?
There has been a small portion that took place, and that was actually realized in Q1. But the majority of our cost synergy savings will occur in the next three quarters. Our planned cost synergies for this year will happen in the next three quarters.
And just turning to organic growth, it was very impressive at 11.8%, especially in Canada. We've seen this overall organic growth figure increase sequentially from Q1 of last year. And I'm just wondering, the guidance that you provided for 2015, is that supported by, you know, some double-digit organic growth? And I'm just trying to figure out really how sustainable is the growth that we saw this quarter.
No, in Canada, as I just said a bit earlier, we expect a decline in revenue for the remainder of the year. But we unfortunately, with the oil and gas downturn in Alberta and the Western provinces, that's going to have an impact on the results. But I'd say the overall fundamental underlying business in the rest of Canada, I think it's fair to say that we expect growth in the remainder of the year. And so far, I'd say that Quebec is trending positively. I think so. Seems to indicate that we're off a bottom now in Quebec, because we've had a few consecutive quarters of positive growth. So this is good.
Okay. And then just the overall organic growth in the other areas, Americas, APAC.
Listen, right now, other than Canada, we're seeing continued growth in all countries, in all regions. I think Australia, we can, it's still an early time to call this one, but we would be pleased with a flat year in Australia. But a few project wins can change the dynamics over there. So, and as I said, just said a bit earlier, we're seeing a lot of infrastructure proposals right now, and if we can be fortunate on a few one. Lucky in if we can succeed on a few ones, that could change the dynamics.
Okay, perfect. And just lastly from me, this is more of a housekeeping question, but the EBITDA guidance that you provided, 390 to 430, I'm just wondering, is that adjusted for global corporate costs and amortization of intangibles related to acquisitions, or?
This is inclusive of all global corporate costs, basically. So it's the reported EBITDA.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Neville from Scotiabank. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. You mentioned lower margins in Canada for the rest of the year. Just wasn't sure of the reference points. If that was below the 9.9% in Q1 or the 14% or whatever that was in 2014.
I think it's a reference is made to last year, you know, year-on-year results.
Okay. Okay. And the 500-person reduction in Canada quarter, I mean, is there any normal seasonality to that, or is it sort of all permanent or at least semi-permanent reduction?
I, th- think some of that is related to seasonality, but I'd say most of it is related to the, and some of it had been done in Q4 of last year.
Yeah.
But it's related to a reduced workload.
Okay. Okay. And then the guidance, I just wonder, I realize it's only $10 million or so for multi-consult, but is guidance sort of adjusted for that, or I guess it still falls in that range?
Multi-consult is not the proceeds you're talking about, the proceeds from multi-consult?
No, the I guess the EBITDA generation in the back half that would normally come from that.
No, this is not changing the guidance.
Okay. I guess maybe just one last question. Some of the growth in the backlog, I mean, it was almost 20% in the quarter. Just how, I guess, just having a hard time wrapping my head around that, sort of how to think about that. You know, how much is legacy? How much is sort of the combination of Parsons? Just, you know, you mentioned a few projects, but just, you know, maybe talk a little bit more about that. What's going on?
Listen, it's really hard to slice up and tell you what's legacy and what's but I'd say it's right now it's a good mix of growth in all sectors and in all geographies.
Mm-hmm.
And April should be and also a good quarter. We're seeing a lot of proposal activity everywhere, so it's I think the underlying business is pretty solid. And I think our diversified platform is providing for opportunities in various parts of the world. So we have a part of this backlog comes from a FX gain.
Right.
But the double digit, it's still double digit increase over
June. Oh, sure. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Yuri Lynk from Canaccord Genuity. Your line is open.
Hey, Pierre, can you talk about your thoughts about margin improvement in the UK on the PB side have evolved since you did the deal late last year?
They haven't evolved. It's still early stages, Yuri, to talk about margin improvement. Clearly, I did mention that if we look on the legacy WSP business, where we have a strong baseline, I can tell you that quarter over quarter, and I did say we improved margins year over year by 1%, so we're very pleased with that. On the PB side, we're our objective is to work towards that, and one of the benefits of this transaction is that we see upside in margin improvement down the road. So, but it's clearly too early to comment on this right now.
Okay, but it's the same game plan as you had expressed earlier.
But that hasn't changed.
Each acquisition are different, but obviously the thesis is similar as it relates to the UK.
And I missed it on the outset. At the outset, Pierre, you did talk a little bit about some delays in the integration, maybe of systems. Can you just I hear that, and then I hear the cost synergies. A lot of them didn't come through in the first quarter. Still good numbers nonetheless. But is integration as smooth as you would have anticipated, and just what are some of the issues, if any, that
what I did say is the integration is progressing as planned. So
faster than the integration on WSP. I think there was a bit of confusion there.
Yeah. No, quite to the contrary. I think in terms of the financial integration, we were quite pleased because we achieved this in a much shorter time than with the WSP and Genevar integration. So it's moving along quite well. And as Alex said, we're going to provide you an update with the cost synergies. We're going to give you some more granular details on that after Q2. Because we're going to have more granular details, but we feel very comfortable with our targets in terms of cost synergies. And as I said when we did the deal, cost synergies is only a part of the value of this transaction. We put a lot of effort in revenue synergies, and hope to, at the same time in the Q2 results, give you a bit more color on revenue synergy opportunities.
Okay. That's helpful. I'll turn it over. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Bert Powell from BMO Capital. Your line is open.
Hi, Pierre and Alex. The organic revenue growth, which continues to be quite impressive, how much of that is really due to revenue synergies that you're seeing come through versus just, you know, kind of organic in each of the kind of, let's say, stovepipe regions?
It's, you know, if you ask me today, it's most of it is organic growth. I mean, there are some revenue synergies that are generated, and it's part of it. But a lot of it is we're in markets where we're, you know, I talked about the UK market, you know, and as WSP was awarded the Consultancy of the Year, you know, that doesn't come alone. I mean, we have a strong competition in the UK, but we won this award because we have a strong brand, we have a recognition, we're winning work, we're growing. And I think this, when you have a strong presence in the UK, this trickles down to the Middle East, it trickles down to South Africa and Australia. So that's good. I think we have some positive momentum. We're delivering good work. We're focusing on our clients, and we're focusing also on expanding the. You know, we talked a lot about global clients, about connecting our people, and driving centers of excellence, and. So this we're reaping, I think, the benefits of our client focus that we've put in the efforts that we've put over the past 2 years.
So the growth that you're seeing, then are you recruiting to add headcount to drive that revenue? Are you increasing utilization? Are you increasing labor rates? Just give us a sense of what's underpinning, like how you're meeting the demand for that growth.
Bert, is all of the above. It's just it varies from one location to the other. So I can tell you, for instance, I was in Sweden last week working and improving or increasing even more of the utilization rate. In the Middle East, we're actively recruiting. We're actively recruiting in the UK. But clearly, it's a combination of both. I mean, it's a combination of improving your utilization, but also to recruit good people.
Okay. Is there a lot of capacity in the system to increase the utilization? Because that certainly is helpful to margins, right?
All depends on the location, again. Some location are more efficient than others.
Yeah.
So again, it's not a cookie-cutter answer. I mean, in some location, there is some capacity. We can do better. And in some other location, I agree with you that there's less capacity because the location is very efficient. The operation is very efficient.
And just last question, the headcount in Americas was down 400. Is that reallocation between geographies or what was driving that?
We told you that we reduced headcount in Canada.
Right, but America's went. Yeah, I got the Canada. Canada's down 500.
I think it's seasonality. It's
okay.
And there's seasonality, and there's all obviously some headcount reductions in terms of corporate office and such as a result of the transaction.
Okay, that's perfect. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Lechem from CIBC. Your line is open.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Just following on some of the questions from the prior caller, and around the organic growth, how you actually meet or hire enough people to meet this 12% increase. Are you having trouble recruiting that volume of people to bring on? And if so, are you also seeing any wage inflation or pressure on wages?
Well, it's constant effort. This is clearly a constant effort to meet that goal. Certainly, we'd rather have this problem than the other way around. So it's clearly an area of focus for us right now. But certainly pleased with the milestone that we're reaching.
But the pressures again vary. The markets are also helping us. I think we are working in certain markets that there is growth. There's growth in the UK. There's growth in Asia. There's growth in the Nordic countries. So what you have to do is you have to follow that growth and try to beat that growth, and by gaining market share. And to gain market share, you have to also hire good people. And so it's all of the above, Paul. And I think it varies. There's not a cookie-cutter approach in response to your question. It varies by country.
Is it a problem, though, finding and training that volume of people, especially at a time when you're trying to integrate Parsons? It must be a bit of a strain on the organization, no?
Well, our people are used to double tasking and working hard. So it's they strive in chaos, and that's good.
Okay. Just a couple of housekeeping questions. The amortization of intangibles was $18.3 million in Q1, which annualizes around $73 million, and guidance is $60 million. So I was just wondering, was anything unusual in Q1 here, Alex, or should the guidance be pushed up a bit?
I think part of the intangibles is related to acquisitions, and part is related to amortization of other intangibles. And because I asked this question internally, and we can provide you the exact data on this, Paul, after the call.
Okay.
I'll get back to you as other questions are being. Being answered. I mean, I'll try to get back to you.
Okay, and then just similarly on the depreciation, $14 million, is that a good run rate for the year, for each quarter?
Yes.
Okay, thanks very much, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Tuflom from TD Securities. Your line is open.
Thanks. Question on the cross-selling benefits, Pierre. It sounds like you've already started to see some. Just wondering if that's coming a little bit earlier than you would have expected, and then secondly, whether or not as a result of the combined entity of WSP and Parsons Springer-Hoff, you're seeing larger project opportunities?
Well, clearly, to answer your first question, revenue synergies take time to develop because you have to build the relationships amongst the different people and then create these networks of collaboration in the organization. So I think we're going on plan on this, and we're all already seeing some benefits, and we clearly hope to see much more in the future. Second part of your question was?
Just whether or not, I mean, you mentioned some projects, some of which sounded quite large.
Scale, clearly the Parsons Brinkerhoff brings us a very good complementary expertise in various areas where we can now team together and offer a much broader area of services. And a good example would be in rail stations, where we had a very strong expertise in the vertical piece of the building, and where Parsons Brinkerhoff have very strong expertise in all the horizontal rail equipment and civil, and now we can clearly offer a combined package which is much larger scale and scope. And Parsons Brinkerhoff also bring us some world-class expertise in program management and project management, and gives us access to a much larger scale of projects. So it's a good combination of being able to serve large projects, small projects, and different types of clients everywhere. So it's a good combination, very good combination indeed, Paul.
Okay, perfect. And then secondly...
Oh, that's Michael, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Secondly, for Alex, a big investment in working capital in the quarter, and I guess given the free cash flow guidance, it would suggest that that's going to reverse. But can you just walk us through how that reversal plays out over the course of the year, if in fact it does?
Well, typically we do see a reversal in working capital requirement in the second half of the year. So typically when people are back from holidays at the end of August, you find that September, October, November, December are very good collecting, cash collecting months for us. So to answer your question, broadly speaking and directionally, I do expect this reversal to take place in the second half of this year.
Great. That's it. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Benoit Poirier from Desjardins Capital Markets. Your line is open.
Yeah, thank you very much. Just to come back on the backlog, Alex, I just want to make sure, but you were talking about double-digit growth sequentially, right, if you exclude the FX?
It's the on the backlog you mentioned?
Yeah, exactly.
Backlog increased by approximately, not approximately, increased by 18% over Q4 2014. And approximately 8% of that growth is coming from FX.
Okay.
And they're coming from increase in backlog on a constant currency basis.
Okay, perfect. And just to come back on the previous question about the working capital, does it mean that you'll be in a positive territory in Q2, or basically you'll be more there in the second half, Alex?
I'd like to tell you that it's early days for us. I mean, we closed the transaction in October 31st, so we're as we're progressing in this year, I mean, we're learning. So my intuition tells me it's going to be more in Q2, in the second half, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in Q2. But it could happen in Q2, but I'd like to think it's more of a back-ended in H2.
And when you look at 2014, is it fair also even to say that it's even more driven in Q4 as opposed to Q3? When I look at the Q4 14?
Yeah, the answer is yes.
Okay, very good. And just in terms of your debt matrix to come back to 1.52 time by the end of the year, does it include the proceeds from multi-consult, Alex?
No.
Okay.
So we are, clearly there are a lot of moving parts. But if you exclude multi-consult, we would still aim at being between 1.5 to 2 times. Obviously, this does not include any future acquisition that we would need. But again, you would also need to include the pro forma EBITDA. So the short answer is no.
Okay, perfect. Very good. And just to come back on the UK, you mentioned that the public sector was kind of subdued with given the election. So I'm just wondering whether you expect a stronger contribution from the UK in the second half post the election.
I think the election provides visibility and stability to what was a good market, and so I we would expect continuity, not necessarily more or less, just continuity to what was a good, solid market.
Okay. And just for APAC, you've talked about some retention issues. I'm just wondering if you believe that there was any impact on the margin when we look at the 5.2% that you reported for that segment.
I'm sorry, what are you referring
just
to?
Just in terms of EBITDA margin for APAC, 5.2% in the quarter. You also refer in the note that you experienced some retention issues in the region because it's very competitive for talented people. So just wondering if you saw any impact on the margin side during Q1.
Okay, maybe this is... listen, overall APAC, we said China and Asia had a very good, a very strong quarter, delivered very good margins. Australia, the legacy WSP business had good organic growth and a relatively good performance. Don't forget that the first quarter in Australia coincides with the summer holidays and the Christmas vacation and summer holidays, so it's typically not a very strong quarter. The legacy PB business had a soft quarter, and mostly as a result of a major project cancellation as a result of a change of government in one of the states. So, but overall, retention is not a major issue in Asia right now. So, I don't know where this comment comes from, Benoit.
Okay. And just related to Alberta, have you seen any impact from the NDP election, or it's probably too early to tell?
No, it's maybe a bit too early to tell right now.
Okay. And last one, in terms of global corporate costs, you came out at $12 million in the quarter. Obviously, it's your seasonal weakest quarter, so but you should expect more synergies in the remaining three quarters. So should we expect the $12 million to go up slightly or to come down throughout the year?
It's pretty stable at this point in time, Benoit.
Okay. Thanks for the time.
No problem. I'd like to answer Paul's question. First, if you refer to page 24 of the MD&A, this is where we provided the outlook. And we specifically refer that $60 million is referred to the amortization of intangible assets related to acquisition, not the other, not the amortization on other assets than acquisition. And then if you look at page 16 of the MD&A, in 2015, for the period January 1st to March 28, the total amount of amortization of intangible assets related to acquisition amounted to 14.8%, so very much in line.
8.8 million.
Million, I'm sorry, very much in line with the $60 million that we provide as a guidance.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Sarah O'Brien from RBC Capital Market. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon. Alex, can you explain a little bit more about the working capital drain in Q1? I'm just wondering why receivables would be up and work in progress would be up in Q1 if it's seasonally slower.
Just coming back from the holidays, I mean, it's really cyclical, Sarah. It's in Q1, typically, if you look at the trending over the last few years, even on the WSP side, you do see an increase in working capital requirement in the first half of any given year, and you see a reversal in the second half, basically. And it's purely cyclical. And
okay.
I do expect this to reverse in the second half.
What about the free cash flow generation of Parsons Brinckerhoff relative to legacy WSP? Do you think it's as robust in terms of, you know, if we say like a percentage of EBITDA or percentage
yes,
of earnings?
No, I'd say that it's similar. It's similar at this point in time. Clearly, some extraordinary costs have been paid in Q1 but recorded in Q4. Let's not forget that. I mean, there's the accounting side, but also the cash side. So a lot of things that were accounted for in Q4 were actually paid in Q1. So I can think of, for instance, bonuses, change of control, things like that, integration activities that were accounted for in Q4 but paid in early January, for instance. So I think to draw some conclusion on the first quarter of the combined organization, I think it's premature. I think we need to look at the trending. But to answer your question, Sarah, I think it's similar.
Okay. And maybe just some guidance on the restructuring timeline for the remainder of restructuring costs. How much more are you expecting in F15, and do these generate the synergies, you know, in F15, or is it very much over the next 2 years?
You mean the cost synergies?
Yeah. So first, what's it going to cost you, and second, like when? What's the timeline for the synergies coming through?
Okay. What we had provided at the time of the acquisition was that it would cost us an equal amount to the amount that we would be realizing. So we said it would cost us approximately $25 million to realize annualized synergies of $25 million. And we had also communicated that we were forecasting to realize half of that $25 million in 15 and the other half in 16. And all I'm going to say on this is I think Q1 is, again, a bit premature to provide additional granular details on where we think we're going to end up in 15. So that's why I mentioned that I'll save our comments and observation for the August conference call.
Okay. But in terms of cost, if there was $4 million in this quarter, $4 million or so, there's another, you know, 20-some to come for the remainder of F15?
No, it's not going to be 20 because as I said, I mean, we're thinking about realizing an amount of synergies that would be equal to the amount of spending. So it's not going to be another 20.
Okay. And then I guess just a question on the corporate cost. So the $12 million, I mean, if I'm assuming that's where the synergies are going to come through. So if they're going to be stable through the year, then is that more of an F-16 kind of story?
No, the group costs, Sarah, are only represent a very small amount of cost to the overall cost structure of the business.
Okay.
As you know, we do have I wouldn't say a decentralized model, but a lot of the costs are borne by the region, and just a smaller portion of our costs are borne by the enterprise, basically the overall group. So it's not a fair statement to say that most of the savings will come from the group.
Okay, so it's more of a margin enhancement in the regions that you're looking for in terms of synergies.
In the various countries where we're integrating teams, such as the UK or in the US or in Australia, there's all the costs related to the corporate functions in those countries, and the HR functions, IT functions, the leaseholds, so there's several aspects in terms of the back office support our targets have been allocated across the various regions and obviously at group also.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Frédéric Bastien from Raymond James. Your line is open.
Hi, good afternoon, guys.
Hello, Frédéric.
Not much has been said about your appetite for acquisitions on this call. Are you happy just integrating Parsons and making the odd tuck-in acquisition right now, or are you keeping your options open for a bigger deal?
We will provide an update next week on our strategy, but as I said a bit earlier, we are looking at opportunities in various parts of the world. And the pipeline of acquisitions is healthy right now, but right now our main focus is driving the full potential of this transaction and making sure that we deliver on this transaction. But we also have an opportunistic approach to acquisitions. So if something comes along that's interesting, we are going to look at it. And we also are continuing to focus on our plan of becoming a leading player in every country where we operate. So the Nordics, which were not very impacted by the Brinckerhoff integration, clearly their game plan hasn't changed, and Canada as well, where the integration is quite small, because we often have a large presence here. So I think you'll have more visibility on our objectives in terms of organic growth and in terms of acquisitive growth next week. Frederick.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time. I turn the call back over to the presenters.
Thank you all for being present at this conference call, and I look forward to responding to any questions you could have next week after the presentation of our strategic plan. Thank you very much.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.